You're listening to the Podcast Detroit Network. Visit www.podcastdetroit.com for more information.
Welcome to M Squared TechCast, a live internet radio show offering the latest news and interviews with the people driving business, technology, and politics in Michigan. Now, your hosts, Matt Rausch and Mike Brennan.
Hey, it's Matt Rausch.
And Mike Brennan.
And we're here with another episode of the M Squared TechCast. We've got a great show for you today. Lots of interest and diversity in the guests, and we're going to kick things off with Richard Murray, Chief Product Officer at Plex Systems, which is a manufacturing software company that wants to sort of take over the world one factory floor at a time.
IIoT, also known as Industrial Internet of Things. Speaking of which, Plex recently, I think last month, came out with a survey that looked at the very issue of how many factories, manufacturing plants out there are using, you know, cloud-based systems, and it turned out to be a pretty high number, right, Richard?
That's correct. Yeah, hello, Mike. Hello, Matt. Glad to be here. Yes. Well, where do I start? Let me talk about Plex first, if you don't mind.
Yeah, go ahead.
Plex, we're based in Troy, Michigan, and been serving the shop floor manufacturing for over 20 years. We're a global company as well. We have over 600 customers who've deployed Plex in over 2,000 facilities in 20 different countries.
Wow, that's amazing.
Quite the footprint.
I remember when you were just a little company, I started covering you guys 10 years or so ago, maybe?
More like 15, I think.
Is it that long now? Yeah. But it was a lot smaller operation back then. So anyway, getting back to the survey. Let's talk a little bit about that. We've got to make Caitlin happy, right? I know she's listening. So let's talk a little bit about that. Now, about a third or so of the manufacturers that you surveyed said they are using cloud-based systems, right?
Yeah, well, let me talk about the survey as well. This is our fourth year running the State of Manufacturing Technology Survey, and we surveyed over 150-plus companies around the world, but primarily in North America. And there's a lot of great facts in the report that you'll take a look at when you download the report from our website. But if you want to talk about cloud specifically, we've seen a major shift toward the cloud over the years. And I think right now we're probably less than 10% of our respondents who are not using the cloud, which has dramatically increased. You know, I think it would have been about a third about 2 years ago. And so the cloud is becoming, frankly, you know, standard fare these days, well adopted.
All right. So how are companies using Industrial Internet of Things? What is the problem they're looking to solve with this technology?
Yeah, I think if you back up to the major problem today facing manufacturers, certainly in the U.S., it's really, look, every manufacturer wants to be delivering, developing, shipping high-quality products efficiently and at speed. And the biggest challenge today is talent, frankly, talent. There are thousands of boomers retiring every day in the U.S. I think over the next decade, it's forecasted to be around about 2 million manufacturing jobs unfilled. So what does that mean? That really does drive the need for technology and specifically automation and more specifically IoT, which as talent becomes more scarce, what we're also seeing alongside that is the digitization of the shop floor, if you like, the smart shop floor, where machines can now talk electronically via the web, via the internet. And so that's IoT. It's was and has been a major, if you like, buzzword, but it's becoming mainstream as well now. Within our survey, over 90% of respondents feel it's no longer hype, it's now real. And over about a third, over a quarter, will have plans to adopt IoT over the next few years. And what that means, really, in simply put, is, you know, harnessing those insights now from machinery and being able to, if you like, extrapolate trending data from machine, you know, when is that machine going to possibly fall over? Maybe it's a temperature variable or a torque variable. And rather than rely on regular maintenance schedules where people crawl around plants, you know, checking equipment and making logs, is that data from the machines that predict what's going to happen, actually perform maintenance ahead of time and in a more proactive way. And so that's one way to, if you like, to compensate for the challenge, which is going to be filling all these positions that are just going to be really difficult to fill.
And so what are manufacturers doing about this?
Yeah, well, we're seeing investment. So again, we launched our IoT initiative second half of last year. We made an acquisition, bought an IoT company to help us accelerate need. Now, the need is coming from our customers. You know, they're seeing this proliferation of smart devices, but they're in the sense, well, what do we do with this data? How do we get it? How do we bring it into some central place where we can manage it, manipulate, and respond to it? So, you know, they're looking to invest heavily. We have the perfect solution for that, our IoT offering, but also combined with our centralized cloud single point of truth for all manufacturing data. So they're looking to embrace, get ahead of this trend and looking at us to help them get there through our technology.
So what physically do companies do with this technology? I go back to when I was a college kid and I worked, I worked summers in a paper mill, right? And it was a paper conversion mill. They took rolls of craft paper, glued it together on pinch rollers and turned it into paperboard. It was mostly, mostly for automotive application. It was headliner and trunk liner and stuff like that. How would it, you know, and they had a bunch of machines. They had all these pinch rollers. They had big knives that carved the edges off and sent that stuff to a baler to be baled and recycled, you know, so there's all this machinery humming, and basically none of it was monitored, and they relied on, you know, like guys who had been at the factory for 20 years to look at the paperboard and make sure the quality was okay. How would an operation like that use IIoT technology?
Yeah, I can give you an example of that. So one from our own experience, and I won't name the company, but they're based in Michigan. They actually make baby powder, baby formula. Yeah. And so, and in their process, they have the final stage in their process is to effectively dry out the powder, if you like, using big fans. And that's the end of their process. There was an example where these fans were accumulating, I guess, moist powder that was starting to really slow down the fan to the point where they failed and their production line shut down. Mm. And so as an example of IoT, that fan now, when it's IoT enabled, can be smart enough to really transmit electronically information about the friction, if you like, the torque, temperature, and those variables now, when trended over time, now you can see the scenario where you can either, you know, in advance of that failure, switch production to another line and go in there and repair the machinery, you know, or just take the line down for momentarily to just make that repair or do the maintenance proactively. And that's the biggest difference. It's being proactive now, seeing these trends, these insights, and driving behavior. You're actually bang on, right? In the old world, if you like, it was a case of, you know, take your bet, monitor every 2 weeks, send somebody down there to look at the machine. Is it okay? Yes. Okay. Move on. But now we can start to, with these insights, predict when things may fail, go in there and make the change.
So what does the future look like then, Richard? What do you see in your crystal ball?
Yeah, I think the intersection of trends here. So obviously, again, back to the point of the overarching goal, our survey said people, of course, are driving towards more efficiency, more quality, and automation and integration is the way to deliver that. So IoT is one element. What if you got one leg of that? I see three legs, IoT and automation of the shop floor, the cloud as a venue for data aggregation, manipulation, and action. And then connectivity as well. So, you know, the world becomes smaller. The need to connect from wherever you are is more and more vital. So we've seen a huge trend as well in the adoption of mobile devices on the shop floor as well. So, you know, regardless of where you are in the world, whether you're within the four walls of your plant using a cloud platform to input data through your mobile device, or whether it's an IoT machine, or whether it's one of your customers out there that has data insights coming back into your operation, so you can act as well, plan, you know, post delivery maintenance and support for your customers as well. So really, connectivity, cloud, and IoT automation, three big trends.
All right, I'd like to circle back and talk a little bit more about workforce development, how sort of your software helps people work smarter rather than, you know, and increase productivity.
Right, exactly, yeah. And again, that's really where the cloud angle fits in. So anytime, any place, anywhere, connect to the central platform for all your manufacturing insights and then mobility. It's, you know, the millennials on the shop floor now, Very used to working in a kind of social, if you like, online, mobile way. We've invested heavily in mobile as an initiative of Plex. So we released our second generation mobile platform in the summer of last year. This is providing real rich interactive mobile apps on a device of your choice. I've seen customers' hours, you know, where you'll see operators wandering around the plant floor with their Amazon device, their Apple device, and so enabling that use case to be satisfied through our mobile platform, and of course now as well wearables as well. So we have customers out there using wearable devices as well to whether that's scanning devices, scanning from your wrist, an item that's about to be put in stock and then shipped, and use cases like that. And I think right now 80% of the companies that responded to our survey are using some form of mobile device as well in their manufacturing operations.
All right. I have a question I ask every guest on this show, and I always do ask it.
Question.
Yeah, it dates back to the last recession, basically, when jobs were hard to come by. Now it seems like anyone who wants a job can have three, but is Plex hiring right now, and what skill sets are you looking for?
Oh, great question. Yes, we are growing. We are hiring. We're a growing company. It's funny you mentioned that question because right tomorrow I'm off to meet with our customer advisory board that we meet with every quarter. And one of the points I wanted to make to our customer advisory board is that Plex is a growing company. I gave you some data points earlier, the numbers. But if you look at my organization at Plex, as an example, the product team, we're investing in top draw talent on an ongoing basis. We're going to increase our headcount in product by another 10% this year. Wow. In 2019. So, and that's a continued investment we're making as we invest in ourselves and our customers by extension. But yeah, we're growing, and that's just one part of Plex. I can tell you right now that other parts of the business as well. So my team is the team that builds it, and of course we have teams that sell and market what we have and support what we have as well, and everyone's growing.
So just a very quick question, Richard. I take it you are not originally from Northern California.
No, that's a curious Northern California accent.
Is it?
Yeah,
now?
You know, well spotted, guys. I grew up in the northwest of England. I actually have a manufacturing pedigree as well, even though I spent most of my career in high tech. But I grew up in a very small town in the northwest of England called Workington. And it's a small steel town. And pioneered, actually, early Bessemer technology back in the day, and so my family are all steel workers, and I for whatever reason chose a different path and moved to spent years in London in the high tech industry and came to the States in 2000, 19 years in California. But as you can hear, the accent hasn't left me.
All right, well, thanks very much, Richard Murray, Chief Product Officer at Troy-based Plex Systems. That is plex.com. If you want more information about their industrial Internet of Things
and of
factory
course the
automation
report.
Product,
yes, yes.
And of course the report. Yeah, the report is right there. Thanks very much for being with us today, Richard.
Thank you, Mike. Thank you, Matt.
All right, take care. We'll be right back with another segment of the M Squared TechCast. For right now, this is Matt Rausch
and Mike Brennan,
and you're listening to the M Squared TechCast at Podcast Detroit.
Lawrence Technological University graduates earn a degree and a higher starting salary. In fact, when it comes to earning potential, the Brookings Institution ranks LTU fifth among U.S. colleges and universities. Be enriched. Be more. At LTU, possible is everything.
Salaries of Lawrence Tech grads are among the highest of any university in America. Plan a campus visit to meet with counselors, faculty, and coaches. Why wait? Find out more at ltu.edu.
As a Lawrence Technological University graduate, you're not only marketable, you're worth more. Yes, more. According to payscale.com, when it comes to graduate salaries, LTU is in America's top 100. Be invaluable. Be more. At LTU, possible is everything.
Salaries of Lawrence Tech grads are among the highest of any university in America. Plan a campus visit to meet with counselors, faculty, and coaches. Why wait? Find out more at ltu.edu.
Hey, it's Matt Rausch.
And Mike Brennan.
And we're back with another segment of the M-Squared TechCast.
And we have two guys that always like to come in frequently, Richard Steenan and Dan Lorman, to scare the pants off us. And so today we have Dan Lorman's turn.
And today we don't have the studio cam, which is a good thing if they're going to scare the pants off us.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I wouldn't want to see that. Yeah. This is a family show, after all, for Christ's sake, you know? So anyway, So one of the things that I was talking to, well, actually, I was communicating with Dan yesterday, and he put out a column that I was reading that said essentially that governments and businesses, I find this incredibly hard to believe, still aren't taking cyber threats as seriously as they should. I mean, that's incredible, right?
Yeah, I mean, first of all, thanks for having me back, guys. Appreciate it. I think, you know, the focus of the article and the theme is that, yeah, I think I'd say the majority are taking it very seriously. So I don't think this is the majority, but I do think there's a large minority of companies that are not. And I hear it all over the place. I mean, I did this piece mainly because I hear this all over the country. People saying things like, my management doesn't take security, doesn't get security. We don't take it seriously. We're the executives, you know, we did cyber a few years ago and now we're over that. We're on to something else or they're really focused on like one or two products. Like, you know, fill in the blank security product, whether it's, you know, whatever it might be. It could be two-factor authentication, identity management. Could be something related to, how they find, real-time threats that hit their environment. But they're ignoring whole other sections and those big holes in their security approach. And I hear this from more and more security pros. And I said, I got to do an article on this because I think there's a large percentage of governments, public and private sector, that still do not really, in an ongoing way, take security seriously.
Huh. Hard to believe.
Yeah, well, I mean, when you look at the numbers, I mean, I did some percentages I included in here, and you guys jump in here, but I a recent survey done by Tripwire, this data is about a year and a half old, but I don't think it's changed all that much. 11% of respondents believe their organizations track all hardware devices on their networks. 21% say organizations track more than 90% of their software. 56% track less than 70%. So, that's a small number. A third of respondents said their organizations don't require changing default passwords. 41% don't use multi-factor authentication for administrative accounts. 43% do not require unique passwords for each system. More than a third struggle to enforce configuration settings, and two-thirds of the organizations don't follow any security hardening benchmarks like CIS, Center for Internet Security, or others. So again, these are not, this is not, 100%. Certainly, there's a lot of organizations, certainly Fortune 500, I think, take security seriously. But there's especially the mid-size, small organizations, and some larger organizations have a lot of work to do.
Well, you come out of the government sector, so I think you can speak to that. Certainly, Michigan takes it very seriously. How about the other states?
Yeah, great question, Mike. I've been quoted as saying, and I still believe it's true. We're kind of at about a third. I mean, you got your leaders, you got your followers, and you got your laggards. And I do think no one is going to publicly raise their hand and say I'm against security. it's not a good career move. So I think everyone is saying the right things. I think the challenge becomes, are they actually doing it, and are they following through, and what do the numbers actually say? And a lot of this is from security pros and technology leaders, pros that are actually saying, look, it's just. Despite the fact that people are saying this, that we're just not doing the right things in an ongoing way. It's not continuing. And I think it's a mixed bag. I think people are all over the map. And in Michigan, we're very centralized in our approach. I think, they've appointed the new CISO. Chris is doing really got a great background. He's doing a great job. I think, different agencies, a lot of states, a lot of counties, a lot of federal governments are very decentralized, and you may even have one organization, one division, or one agency doing a really good job and another agency right next to it not doing a very good job. So what I'm trying to say is there's a very mixed picture out there.
Huh. Well, what is it going to take to get their attention? Why do they not take this seriously or seriously as they should?
Yeah, I think there's two main reasons. I would go, you know, really one, you know, what will it take to get attention? I'll tell you one thing I mentioned in the article is a breach. I mean, I had to, sad to say it, but, you know, wakes people up. I've had a lot of consultants tell me, and I've seen it myself, that the difference in attention when you go into an organization that's just had a major breach, that's just been embarrassed, you know, their name's all over the papers, the focus is like a laser focus. There's a lot of interest in everything you say, and their livelihood is on the line, right? Others that maybe haven't been breached, they say we must be doing something right. So, you know, maybe they're just not as attentive. I think people, the other thing is that they don't see it as an ongoing challenge, kind of like living a healthy lifestyle versus a one-off diet kind of thing. You know, why? You know, people say, I've tried that diet, or I've tried the South Beach diet, or I've tried the Atkins diet. But the problem is, you know, you add up all the diets and they still look overweight.
Yeah.
I mean, the challenge is that people try different things. They say, "Why we did that 2 years ago? We did that 5 years ago," but they're not. It's not an ongoing, consistent process. That, you know, people, process, and technology. We say, and it's got to be an ongoing thing, and they just can't keep it going. And that's why I think we're seeing the huge breach numbers. You know, the other piece a couple weeks ago about the 2018. The second most active year on record for data breaches, followed only by the year before that. 2017 was actually a bigger year, 7.9 billion records in 2017, about 5 billion in 2018. But big numbers. So, you know, we're still seeing huge number of breaches. And when people do get breached, then all of a sudden, you know, sadly, that's when they take it seriously.
So have the techniques that are used by the bad guys to engineer these breaches, have those really changed that much? I mean, what's the latest in that department?
Yeah, I mean, great question, Matt. I think the techniques, you know, they're the bad guys are getting better, the bad actors. I also think the other challenge is, you know, when you really look at what's going on, most of the breaches are not happening with zero day, you know, kind of cutting edge technology. What this says is that a lot of systems are vulnerable with you know, vulnerabilities and exploits that were been out there for years that just have not been patched. So, you know, if you can use a simple old, you know, exploit or vulnerability that's 5 years old and it works, why go spend a lot more money and do 0 days? So the criminals are not stupid. You know, they're saying, let's just do the easiest thing. If the door's wide open, let's just walk in the front door. There's nothing to stop me. It's not quite that easy, but I think in many cases, you know, they're not having to do, you know, very highly targeted. And certainly, you know, we talk about the Russians or nation states or other really, really advanced actors. That's a whole different world. I'm talking about businesses and, you know, state and local governments mainly. You know, we're talking a lot of vulnerabilities just have not been patched.
Hmm. Or they fall for phishing attacks. That seems to be the you know, the stupid thing that people do, right?
That happens as well. You're right. I mean, you know, the people side of it, they're always going to be looking for ways that they can trick people, you know, and I think the social engineering, we call it, you know, phishing attacks, looking for, you know, constantly, you know, looking for ways that you can trick people. And you know, they go from one extreme to another, very, very sophisticated. It's a very simple, hey, dad, check out this iTunes kind of stuff. And you know, it's you got to always be on guard. I mean, that's really what it comes down to. Again, I think, don't get me wrong, guys, there's a lot, we've been talking about this for several years. There are a lot of organizations doing a great job and that are really working hard at this. But I think the focus of why I really, you know, wanted to emphasize this now is I just keep hearing, I heard it literally a couple weeks ago from some people at an event I was at here in Michigan, just, you know, a strong minority of people that just are very, very, very frustrated because they're just not able to break through. It's sad. It's hard to believe in 2019 that's the case, but it's they're out there. And if you look at the comments on LinkedIn to the blog I posted, you'll see, you know, literally hundreds of comments, but people, you know, responding with similar comments.
Hmm.
And what's the proportion? I mean, is it, oh, this is overblown, or is it serious?
Oh, people say, oh, yeah, I've heard all these one-liners. I mean, everyone's like, yeah, it doesn't surprise us, you know. And again, I think the challenge often is, it's like, you know, it's almost like in some ways, I can keep using analogies, guys, but, you know, it's almost like running a decathlon. I mean, you can be good at one thing or two things. Maybe you're good at running, you're good at swimming, but you're not good at rowing, or you're not good at, you know, whatever, discus or high jump or whatever.
I've always found the javelin a challenge myself, but yeah. Hey, that's just me.
But Matt's a high jumper, though. So.
People are good at one or two things, or maybe, you know, but it's hard to be consistently good across the board, and I think that's the challenge. I do think we've talked about this several times. The talent gap continues to be a big issue, getting enough good people. I also think another challenge people are facing is you're hard to believe the economy's, you know, near record highs on Wall Street, but some people still say money. They don't have enough money. They don't have enough resources. Mm. So there's a lot of reasons people give. And I think, but in many cases, it's they don't have a continuous ongoing view of it. This is not a one and done, or I did good yesterday. It's more like living a healthy lifestyle requires eating right, exercise, et cetera, in an ongoing way, not just once or twice.
We've got about 3 minutes left. So let's talk a little bit about what you see for 2019. If you knew that for sure, right, you'd make a lot of money. But I mean, just in general, what are the trends for 2019?
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of focus. You know, next week is RSA out in California. I'll be out at RSA in San Francisco, and you know, it's going to be another record year for attendance. They're saying we'll see what happens. It's pretty crazy. The number of new artificial intelligence is certainly a big hot topic. I think different opinions on that, whether artificial intelligence will be really the game changer that people think it's going to be. But certainly machine learning, you know, using more and more data analytics to be able to track vulnerabilities and track issues as far as malware goes, as far as the exploits that are people that are coming at people. That's a big trend right now. You know, I think there's going to be a lot more company buyouts. You know, just recently, and I think already this year, there's been a couple acquisitions. Cylance was purchased by BlackBerry, which is a big surprise, and it's a BlackBerry. You know, back on the board here as a security company. So, you know, I think you're going to see more acquisitions. Certainly, if the stock market keeps going up, and then we have the deal in China, it would be really interesting to see some international acquisitions, you know, and what happens with that. But a lot of people are getting optimistic that we're going to have a trade deal with China and that the stock market can keep going up. I think that's going to keep, you know, driving security companies. Last year, we had a lot of big ones here in Michigan. We had Duo Security purchased by Cisco. Cisco. So we've had a number of different other deals around the country. And I think you're going to see more of that in 2019.
All right, Dan, we're under a minute now. How do people get a hold of you?
Thanks, guys. It's at GovCSO on Twitter. And you can reach me at securitymentor.com as well. Security Mentor is a company I work for, a security awareness training company. We provide end-user security training in a gamified way that's engaging and fun. But certainly also encourage you to Google Dan Lorman, look at my blogs. I do a weekly blog for Government Technology Magazine.
All right. Thanks very much, Dan Lorman, cybersecurity expert. That's LOHRMANN. Thanks for being with us. We'll be right back with another segment of the M Squared TechCast. For right now, this is Matt Rausch.
And Mike Brennan.
And you're listening at PodcastDetroit.com.
What do you get at Lawrence Technological University? Everything. Great labs and studios, supportive professors, plus a full campus life, NAIA athletics, and all the software you need to succeed. Be smart. Be more. At LTU, possible is everything.
Salaries of Lawrence Tech grads are among the highest of any university in America. Plan a campus visit to meet with counselors, faculty, and coaches. Why wait? Find out more at ltu.edu.
Lawrence Technological University is all about opportunities. You learn beyond the campus, doing real-world research for top companies and honing your skills through co-ops and internships. Apply what you learn. Be challenged. Be more. At LTU, possible is everything.
Salaries of Lawrence Tech grads are among the highest of any university in America. Plan a campus visit to meet with counselors, faculty, and coaches. Why wait? Find out more at ltu.edu.
Hey, it's Matt Rausch.
And Mike Brennan.
And we're back with another segment of the M-Squared TechCast.
We are indeed. And we have with us once again, Gail Bernard, who's the new sales and marketing manager. Actually, I looked at your title on LinkedIn. You're like for the Americas or something, right?
Yep. Yep, for the Americas.
All right. Is that North, South, and Central or what?
It's really North America.
Okay, all right.
Yeah.
Oh, we should say which company? With CyberNor. And CyberNor... Well, you define it for me. I've tried to define it different ways, but you tell me what CyberNor is.
I would say we are really classified as a digital transformation company. And by that, you know, there's a lot that goes into transformation, but we operate at the infrastructure level. So at the database level, operating system level, and we keep essentially everything running. So all the Internet of Things and all the devices that come into that infrastructure, writing information, requesting information, that's the area that CyberNor sets. That's our offering.
And Oracle is your prime focus, but you also do Microsoft.
We do. We do AWS, Amazon's web services. So when we talk about moving into the cloud, it could be any number of web service providers. So, you know, we do all three of those for sure. And so I thought today maybe we do some success stories.
Yes, that would be good because Amadou otherwise will tell us all about database development.
Exactly. So just to put it in perspective for the business people that may be on the line and looking at cloud or trying to understand what all these Internet of Things, IoT, and all these new names we keep coming up with in IT, what they mean and what we can do for you and our kind of the segment we sit. But actually, one of our success stories is Citigroup. Huh. And for 8 months, they had application and data issues. And they called in Oracle. They called in a lot of different companies to assist. And they had no success. Huh. And so they called us. And 2 days, we resolved the issue. But I, here again, attribute that to someone like Ahmed and our team that is very strong. When we look at resources in companies, we often say, you know, we're looking for this talent and that talent. Well, we're all pulling from the same talent pool, regardless if you're IBM or you're Oracle or, you know, or a consulting firm. You're all competing for essentially the same resources. But I think the thing that's really been good for CyberNor is that Ahmed has always stayed involved, number one. The talented people really want to be satisfied and do interesting work and see some good results. And that's really what we're about. So it doesn't surprise me that we did that. We resolved it after 2 days and took everybody 8 months and didn't fix it. So then we moved on after that. We moved the 11 terabyte database from AIX to Linux. So we did the replatforming, and it's the largest procure to pay installation in the country.
And that was for whom?
For Citigroup.
Okay.
So we did the initial migration when they started it was probably about 80 hours plus. And it may not seem like a lot, but it is because you've got to have systems up and running. And especially when you're trying to do some replatforming, it gets difficult. So we came in and we got them down to 20 hours. And then we did the tuning and migration for them. So it takes a lot to do that. We've also done replatforming and upgrades, including performance tuning for, NCR. And we reduced the upgrade time from 11 days to 2 days. So,
wow.
Yeah, so you can see It's somewhat counterintuitive. You don't go into an organization and say, I want to live in your organization. If we're going to be in there a lot, we're going to be doing, very results-oriented things.
So you're like a virtual CIO.
Well, you know what? Yeah. And I think what we're really, if you look at that back end, we're virtual in that to have resources that can do these upgrades and to do the replatforming and to do the kind of support that we do.
Uh-huh.
Typically, organizations won't have those on site. So if you're talking about, they may have AIX specialists in the case of NCR. In the case of Citigroup and going to Linux, the nuances are different.
Uh-huh.
So when you're talking about production, you got to get this stuff going.
Right.
So, so it's those kinds of things I think that are key. I mean, the other one we do managed services for is EMC.
Uh-huh.
And, you would think, well, it's EMC, but they actually have probably one of the largest, e-business and clustering installations in the market today. So we have done their systems upgrades. The other part we do is design the key application extensions and interfaces. So if you're talking about Internet of Things and you're adding mobile devices, you're adding light pens, you're adding all these elements within maybe an ERP or, the office setting, you've got all these things going on. When they come, they've all got to come to that infrastructure. And so from that perspective, the key piece is really the design and the interface part of it. And then we do performance profiling once they're added in, which then allow it to appear seamless. But it's not really.
Huh.
A lot of work goes into it. So,
well, talk about the organization. I know it's just not Ahmed doing all the work.
No.
We keep him busy, but not that busy,
right? Yeah, right,
right.
But, I think the key piece for him is you do see people that do startups and you do see CEOs that get into the business part and stay in the business part. His big thing, and I want to say it's probably his 25 years out in Silicon Valley,
uh-huh.
is, he loves to develop actual product and solutions. So he has his calls every Wednesday, and he might actually have them every day, depending on the client, to ensure that the issues are being addressed,
uh-huh.
and that if there's any, irregularities that they're seeing,
uh-huh.
he can speak to that. And so it makes, it ensures that customers get the highest quality and that he's achieving those 11 to 2 days, the 8 months to a few days. That's important to him. So it is kind of interesting. He does maintain a strong oversight. And he doesn't sleep a lot and works a lot. So I don't see him ever as not doing that, which I in particular prefer.
Uh-huh. And
because I myself will look at clients' issues and say, that sounds like, it's a operating system. It's a database issue. So it's the ability to look at that. And I don't move far away from that myself, even in sales.
Yeah.
So that customers don't have a lot of time to tell you what's wrong. It's sort of like, when you have a requirement, I don't know what I want, but I'll know it when I see it. Right.
Oh.
Or, or something's wrong. I don't know what it is. And so I need to, be able to get to some of that stuff quickly, even as a salesperson, so
sure.
that we can achieve, that we're the value proposition over any competitors we have.
And the fact that you have folks gathered around the globe means you can do 24/7, right?
Yes. Yep. And so, I'd say when we talk about, doing those things, if businesses are out there listening now, I think one of the things we talked about previously was our lift and shift offering. And we do, in essence, we come in and evaluate the current installation. We can do that on any organization or any enterprise and issue a systems report if that's what the client wants. But we'll look at those you know, their organization, and then we'll let a customer know if they're ready to move to the cloud, what they need to do to move to the cloud. We'll move them for free, and then we will do the managed services. So that's the lift and shift. So that helps small and medium businesses move at a safe pace, right? At a cost effective pace, and you know, they get their system analyzed.
Okay, I got 2-3 minutes left here. So, looking at your list, your big thing now is your value proposition is the readiness assessment, right?
Yes, yeah, readiness assessment is really that piece that indicates to a business organization that they're either not ready or ready, or what they need to get there. We can do all those things. So the way we do it is we'll scope out, we'll look at what that customer actually can afford to do. And if they're thinking of, you know, maybe moving to the cloud down the road, what their current systems look like, what they're going to need to do it, and, you know, kind of what it would cost them to, you know, their options essentially to get those things done. Because it's very difficult, you know, in small, medium, and business, you know, SMB space,
right,
for companies to, I'm hearing it. Am I missing the boat? Am I keeping my competitive advantage? Well, the only thing that's going to allow them to do that is that infrastructure, period.
Right.
You know, so if you've got no infrastructure, you're not getting there. And if you don't have the proper tuning and so on and so forth, you're not certainly not going to be able to you know, manage the additional traffic and, you know, other things that you need to have first.
But the sweet spot, from my understanding now working with you guys since last May, is really Fortune 1000 companies. That's really what you focus on, right?
Yeah, we have. And I think really the expansion into the SMB space is important. But yeah, I would say absolutely. And when you're in Michigan, right, the manufacturing's huge. We see a lot of people. I think earlier in the segment, you had Plex. So you've got SAP, you've got PeopleSoft. So you've got all those ERPs,
right,
hitting on, you know, on that infrastructure. So it makes sense that we have, you know, a ton of experience doing that.
Okay. We also got about a minute left, so this is where you can do the shameless plug for Plex. Plex. We were talking about Plex, but Cybernor,
plug for Cybernor, yeah. Please.
Well, certainly, you know, I think we're well-positioned. I think we bring a rich portfolio out of the Silicon Valley, without the Silicon Valley prices, right? And, you know, I think the ability for companies to look at, you know, issues they're having, or where are they today, and do, you know, I want to move to the cloud, or, you know, we need our tuning, our applications, whatever that is that sits at that level, we can come in and do that. So I think we have a better value proposition than pretty much anybody in our space.
And finally, how do they find out more? What is the website?
The website is cybernor.com. It's cybernor.com.
All right. Thanks very much, Gail Bernard, Sales and Marketing Manager for Southfield-based IT services firm Cybernor. We'll be back with another segment of the M-Squared TechCast in just a moment. For right now, this is Matt Rausch.
And Mike Brennan.
And you've been listening to the M-Squared TechCast.
Lawrence Technological University is more than a school. It's a launchpad for your future, offering industry-leading facilities and 100-plus programs that are ranked among the nation's best. Be unstoppable. Be more. At LTU, possible is everything.
Salaries of Lawrence Tech grads are among the highest of any university in America. Plan a campus visit to meet with counselors, faculty, and coaches. Why wait? Find out more at ltu.edu.
Lawrence Technological University graduates earn a degree and a higher starting salary. In fact, when it comes to earning potential, the Brookings Institution ranks LTU fifth among U.S. colleges and universities. Be enriched. Be more. At LTU, possible is everything.
Salaries of Lawrence Tech grads are among the highest of any university in America. Plan a campus visit to meet with counselors, faculty, and coaches. Why wait? Find out more at ltu.edu.
Hey, it's Matt Rausch.
And Mike Brennan.
And we are back with today's final segment on the M Squared TechCast. And we have with us today an entrepreneur, Gina Adams, who is the founder and CEO of Wearology. That's spelled Wareology. Wearology is how it's pronounced. And she is a client of the Centropolis Accelerator at my employer, Lawrence Technological University.
Shameless plug bell.
Yes, that's the bell we ring when we make a shameless plug. So, yep. But this is a show about tech and entrepreneurship, so you're right in the sweet spot here. So tell us more about Wearology. What's the company's mission?
So thank you for having me. I appreciate this opportunity. And our mission is to restore independence and empower people with disabilities through innovative products.
Okay. So what's your involvement with this? Do you have people in your inner circle who have disabilities? Are you, you know, related, you know, that kind of thing, friends, family?
Yeah, my inspiration, sadly, was when my stepfather contracted Parkinson's and witnessing that impact on him physically as well as emotionally. There was a bit of a ripple effect on my mom as a caretaker and just watching that.
Tough disease, yeah.
It is.
All right, so tell us about this product you're launching. It's a magnetic button, as I understand it. How did this idea originate?
So I just completed my MBA at Wayne State, and through that process was able to conduct some customer focus groups and understand that right now the current solutions for people are basically tools that don't really work, or there's some expensive adaptive apparel. So my experience is in the apparel industry over 15 years working for J. Crew and the North Face, and I just figured there had to be a better solution.
I knew there had to be an industry thing in here somewhere,
yeah,
right?
Suddenly I feel underdressed.
Right? Yeah, right.
So our solution is it's an adaptive button set, so you can convert any traditional button shirt in your closet into a magnetic closure to overcome disabilities and limitations in dexterity. So it really, it applies to not only degenerative diseases like Parkinson's, but even any type of neuropathy that you would experience from a surgery or maybe a stroke.
Okay.
Yeah.
And I would imagine it could be useful for people with vision challenges as well.
Absolutely. Okay. It's so really
you just get it in the proximity thereof and it automatically comes together. Is that right?
It does. I'd love to demonstrate, but since our viewers can't quite see it, we won't bother. So yeah.
Well, maybe we could point people to a video where they could see it or something like that.
Absolutely.
All right. So I understand you worked with, as we mentioned earlier, the Lawrence Tech University Centropolis Accelerator in the development of this product. Can you tell us a bit about their involvement?
Well, I went through the Build for Scale workshop and was really impressed by their ability to help us take a product idea and find sourcing suppliers here in Michigan to work with the product development, because it is a new product, has been really challenging. And so we're fortunate enough to work with them to help us kind of piece this together.
Okay.
Okay, so have they brought in experts to talk to you about manufacturing, that kind of thing, or what have they done?
Absolutely. We worked with magnet experts as well as looking at the plastic component. It's only four parts. It's a pretty simple product. Mm-hmm. However, it's gone through several different iterations because nothing like this exists right now. So working with CAD designers and really focusing on fine-tuning the product itself.
That is one of the questions I was looking at here. So what's the backstory on that? How did you get that all developed?
3D printing has been our saving grace. Mm-hmm. And actually we worked with Desai, who is also a Lawrence Tech group. Mm-hmm. And
yeah, that's the Derbyshire family.
Exactly.
Dick Derbyshire, who recently passed away, had, I think, 11 kids, and six of them went to Lawrence Tech.
No kidding.
So, yeah. So it's a Lawrence Tech family pretty much.
Yeah. So they the development costs have been really expensive. And so they were actually able to help 3D print so that we could get these into the hands of occupational therapists and they could test and try them out and really validate the product and its value towards their clients.
What sort of timeline? It sounds like this has taken a long time to get together. How long has it taken?
It's been a year since we founded our company, and to date, we finally do have a product and it's been amazing in terms of just within a very short period of time, how much we've been able to put together. Hmm.
So you're a startup. You're developing a physical product. I would venture to say that most of the startups I'm familiar with in the Detroit area are more concept or software oriented, where they're working on
we don't
an
have a
app
lot of hardware
or a piece of
here,
software.
Yeah.
So what do you think are the special challenges at getting a product right?
Well, you definitely have to be a bit scrappy in terms of even from finding funding. Like I mentioned, I was fortunate enough to be able to develop the business plan from not only product, but from the marketing stance through the program at Wayne State. But I would say that being able to find different suppliers and go out for different quotes was important to really be able to bring this product to fruition. Mm-hmm. I've been competing in pitch competitions, and you know, grants are pretty slim because it's a very packed entrepreneurial world right now.
Oh, yeah.
And so there's not a lot of free money. I asked for a money tree for Christmas and I didn't get it. So
here
we are.
I can appreciate
most
that.
Most of us didn't get that.
Yeah. Okay. Except Jessica. She drives a Cadillac, so she got her money tree.
Okay.
So.
Yeah. But the networking has been essential. And just from the different universities and being able to really pull together, even the SBDC here in Michigan has been really supportive.
Yeah. They're a regular guest on this show. The SBDC people are.
It's so helpful.
Yep. So I was encouraged to learn that you made a commitment to build your product in Detroit. Can you share more about those plans?
Yeah, my team member, James Murtha, he himself is a paraplegic and has been really instrumental in inspiring us to understand that it's not just the dressing issues that he faces on a daily challenge, but everything from toothbrushes to the other day, he was like, hey, Gina, put those two hats on my lap. And I asked him, like, well, you have a hat on your head. And he's like, well, that's what I use for mittens. And so I was just like, there has to be a better solution than this. So the magnetic adapters are just the first product of many that will help us sustain business growth. But I think that in terms of building here in Detroit, we have a commitment to hire people with disabilities because we've met so many amazing, innovative, and interesting people through our customer discovery work. Mm-hmm. And then we're looking at basing our headquarters right here in Detroit, as I mentioned,
Detroit proper, or
there's a whole garment industry that's coming up in southern, East Detroit, Southeast Detroit. So we're hoping to partner with them. And
I hadn't heard that.
It's the first I heard it too.
I had heard there's a fashion incubator in downtown Lansing. It's the old Knapp's department store there, but I hadn't heard about anything like that in Detroit. That's cool.
Okay. Yeah.
Yep. So where do you think your business still needs help as you sort of finalize the product and move towards production?
Money, right?
Well, of course. But, you know, the partnerships have been key. So looking at senior living facilities or in-home care providers where we see our product brings a huge value to their clients as well as the nurses' aides, that it's their number one mission is to help their clients remain independent. So, you know, we're looking for partnerships where we could perhaps sell in bulk so that we can drive our product volume increases up and drive our costs down so that we can continue
basic
to
rules
manufacturing here.
Yes. Yeah. So ballpark figure, I know it's a little early, but what do these buttons cost? I know you sold.
A set will retail for $25. They're transferable to other shirts.
How many in a set typically?
So out of the box, we're going to sell 9. A typical shirt has 7 buttons in front and 2 cuffs. And so these are transferable.
Work.
They're machine washable. And they'll withstand like an industrial laundry that you'd find in a senior living
and
area.
And you can put them in a dryer?
You can.
No kidding. I think the magnet would get affected. But not, huh?
Well, it might stick,
gets bounced around a little bit.
Might stick to the inside of the drum of the dryer. But other than that,
So
watching the clothes go around, great old beef. What was that? The Pretenders song.
Who needs TV, right?
That's right. So how would someone who's got a dexterity issue in their hands or know somebody with this issue, where do they go to learn more about this product? Because it sounds really interesting.
Well, for starters, you can go to our website. That's the easiest spot. And you can find us. The name of the product is Buttons to button.
Uh-huh.
It was inspired by a White Stripes song, it's the noun.
That's
buttons.
A little more contemporary than the Pretenders.
Like, yeah,
a little. But it's buttons, as in plural, the noun, to button the verb.
And is that the website as well?
Yep.
Okay, buttons to buttons. All right.
Buttons to button. The second one singing. Yeah, the second
button,
one singing.
It's a verb. Yeah.
Yeah, all right.
Or wearology.com. Either
yeah.
way.
Yep. Okay. So if you can tell us a little bit more about those future products, what are you looking at next?
Well, mittens seem to be an essential need, particularly in this winter.
Boy, isn't it? Yeah.
Here in Michigan. So we hope to, develop not only that, but James is working on a retriever right now that helps if he drops something. He's able to pick it up like a phone or, anything that he needs to get.
It'll be kind of cool, too, is a scarf. I mean, I wrap a scarf around. If it's windy, it's blowing off me all the time.
Mm-hmm.
That'd be kind of cool. Like it clips around your neck there, So.
Yeah. I think that years ago I used to teach skiing for people with disabilities, and the mittens are kind of near and dear to me because we used a lot of duct tape. And it was at that point that I realized we could probably do something a little bit better.
Yeah,
so.
That's interesting. We have a class, a sophomore engineering design class at Lawrence Tech that designs products for people with disabilities. I think maybe you might want to get in touch with them.
That's
I can put you in touch with
idea.
Them.
Thank you.
And a couple of years ago, they actually did sporting goods for people with disabilities, and one of the things they did was skis, because disabled people can have a great time on a ski slope if you give them the right equipment, right?
Yeah, but, it's the first time they can kind of resume that level of freedom.
Yeah.
And let gravity take hold. So, yeah, it's a really great experience.
Okay. So news has broken out here.
Ooh, yes. There you go.
Yeah, if the people in the entrepreneurial engineering design studio class at Lawrence Tech are listening, I think I've got a hot one for you.
Well, we'll send them this segment and they can listen to it.
All right. Sounds good.
Well, why don't you ask your question? She's pretty young in the process, but...
This is a question I ask of every guest that we have here, and it stems from back during the last recession when jobs were hard to come by and there were pink slip parties and that kind of thing. I ask, are you hiring right now, and if so, in what skill sets? And if you are hiring, how do people get a hold of you?
Thank you for hiring. Yes, we are hiring right now. And you are welcome to give us a call. Can I give my number out?
Absolutely.
Sure. Yeah.
All right. So at 248-840-0248, we are looking for a sales team because it's as a new product, we really are emphasizing on the marketing and we're looking at trying to diffuse the information as fast as possible. So.
Yeah.
So is that also available on the website? Do you have a join
e-commerce?
Us?
You
site?
Haven't. Yeah, if you go to the website, you can find us for sure.
And that's Wearology, WareologyE.
Or
buttons to button.
Button.
Yeah.
I tried
plural
looking it up.
Singular.
I tried Googling it this morning, and I went buttons to buttons and got nothing. And I'm going, am I reading this wrong or something? Or?
Nope.
You got to type it in. You have to unfortunately type the whole.
Yeah, because I was getting all sorts of weird stuff on Google,
Yeah.
Amazon kept trying to sell me buttons,
Okay. Well, once again, this is Gina Adams, founder of Wearology, talking about her company's latest products, disability-friendly magnetic buttons. And they are a client of the Centropolis Accelerator, a business accelerator managed by Lawrence Tech in the city of Southfield. So that's a shameless plug
for
my employer.
Yep, make them
want
happy.
To thank Gina for being with us today. Want to thank all of our guests here today as I somewhat lose my voice.
Yep.
Gail Bernard, sales and marketing manager of the Southfield-based IT services firm Cybernewer, former Michigan Chief Information Security Officer Dan Lorman, now an independent cybersecurity consultant with a company called Security Mentor. Check him out if you want to know more about cybersecurity. And we kicked off the show with Richard Murray, Chief Product Officer at Troy-based Plex Systems, talking about a survey that showed fully a third of manufacturers are already using industrial Internet of Things technologies. I think we covered the waterfront today.
Yeah, there was sort of a theme there, I guess. IoT kept weaving through this, to protect it, how to develop it, how to build it.
And manufacturing, too, because we are in Michigan. We actually make stuff here.
That's right. So. And then we have a manufacturing product.
Yeah.
So, I didn't even intend this, but it worked out like that.
Who needs show prep? Occasionally it works that way.
Yeah, kismet, right? So.
Okay. Well, we'll be back with you again next Monday at 2 p.m. Eastern Time. You can listen anytime you like at MITechNews.com or our sponsors, our hosts here, the Mothership, home of IT in the D, which is PodcastDetroit.com.
Should be called Jessica.com, I think. Though,
yeah, right? I think you're right. Yeah, Jessica, the peerless engineer.
Yep.
And or wherever else fine podcasts are given away for free. Yep. We're there. It's the M Squared TechCast. We'll talk to you again next week. For right now, this is Matt Rausch.
And Mike Brennan.
And you've been listening to the M Squared TechCast.
Thanks for listening to M Squared TechCast, a live internet radio show offering the latest news and interviews with the people driving business, technology, and politics in Michigan. Join your hosts, Matt Rausch and Mike Brennan, next Monday at 3 p.m. If you can't listen live, audio podcasts of the show can be found at PodcastDetroit.com.